coming up in this episode of the D&D Podcast.
To figure that out, do you have a topic in mind, a specific one?
Yes, we are talking about Hammerfest.
Oh, cool.
Probably at the end, but because you worked on that anyway.
I should go grab a copy.
And Trevor Kidd is going to be attending. He was at PAX East.
Oh, cool.
And is going to bring back a little report from that. Sounds and everything else going on in the D&D community side of things.
Sounds good. Hammerfest.
Hammerfist.
Hammerfest is probably some sort of like a metal festival.
Hammerfest was the adventure that we did for the most recent Penny Arcade podcast, there, right? Yeah, they were in Hammerfest.
Out there in internet land, and welcome to the D&D Podcast. I'm Mike Merles, and with me, as usual, is my co-host, Jeremy Crawford.
Hello, everybody.
This week, we're going to talk to Trevor Kidd, who's the, Trevor, what's your exact title?
I'm a community manager. I focus on the D&D side of things right now in the community, though.
So, and you just came back from PAX East mm-hmm. in Boston. At the time of this recording, this is early April. Today's April 7th, so that would have been 2 weeks ago, or is it last weekend?
I came back last Monday.
So just tell us about the show. What happened? What happened at PAX that was interesting? What was the most interesting thing you saw at PAX?
Well, I was working the booth a lot in the D&D room, so I didn't get to see too much cool stuff. I did see a tiny bit of Will Wheaton's keynote, which was awesome. He talked a lot about D&D, so of course I think it's awesome. But Will Wheaton's awesome as far as his getting up and public speaking. But he did a great keynote. He talked about the Red Box. He talked about D&D and how much that affected his life, as well as, you know, the normal video gaming stuff that he's talked about before. At the D&D booth, we had a live play experience where people actually basically walked on a grid, fought a dragon or a wraith, which was really cool. That was super popular, like lined up around the building.
So these were like life-size cutouts of
Yeah,
monsters.
Definitely. Like, so we had like basically DMs behind the standees, like acting out like, "Oh, I'm a dragon coming for you," kind of stuff, and it was pretty cool.
That is cool, but when you first said it, I was imagining someone like in a dragon costume.
No.
Actually, Jeremy, I haven't gone over your Gen Con schedule yet.
This year,
yeah,
I will be going as a beholder.
Oh, that could be cool.
So and then you mentioned there's a D&D room. So we had a pretty good sized presence.
Yeah, we actually had five rooms running D&D after the first day. It got so packed. The enforcers actually had to come in and enforce fire code because the lines for the delve and stuff like that were clogging in the doorways and out into the hallways. So it was pretty impressive. We had this con, we did a lot of what I would call one-off D&D experiences, not like your longer campaign experience. We had the delve, which we usually do, which is basically you sit down with your party and you fight through as much as you can, use the best strategy you can, survive as long as you can. You earn these tokens that you can turn in for product. We also did the Dark Sun preview, which is, of course, awesome. You get to see some of the themes we're doing for Dark Sun. And it's very Dark Sun. There's a little conflict even in the party. There's a what's the guy called?
Templar?
Yeah, there's a Templar in the group who causes a little bit of conflict. He's a defiler. We also ran the catch-up for the D&D encounters. So the first two episodes of D&D encounters we ran there, which was super awesome. And we did something completely new as well called the DM's Challenge. So basically DMs were supposed to show up, run an adventure for 5 to 6 hours for a table, and that table votes to see who wins. Dave Chalker from Critical Hits was actually the winner this year, and but everybody did an awesome job. I walked by and I took some pictures of that and talked to everybody. Everybody was having a great, great, great time with that. But as far as D&D goes, show completely, incredibly awesome.
So now, does that mirror what we're going to have at Gen Con this year? Are we going to have a similar, will we have the same demo with the life-size creatures? I mean, obviously we've always had the delve there. Will D&D Encounters be run at Gen Con this year?
I believe they're going to do an Encounters catch-up again. As far as the live, like the D&D live experience, we're talking about it. There's nothing been finalized yet. I think if we do it, we'd like to do something bigger. Mm-hmm. It packs. There was like, it's like a one room. You walk in, you fight this one monster. It would be cool to do to something that's like whether you go from maybe one room to second room or maybe even to a third room, and you have maybe a little bit more story built in. We're talking about that, although none of that's finalized yet.
Yeah.
So we'll have to see. And we'll still run, if I remember correctly, we're still doing your basic like Living Forgotten Realms stuff that we do at Gen Con and stuff like that. But we do want to keep doing these what we'll call these one-off D&D experiences as well.
So now there's PAX, which takes place in Seattle.
Mm-hmm.
Are we going to have a same presence at PAX this year? And that's in September, isn't it?
I think so. I mean, thanks to...
Yeah, it's Labor Day weekend.
Yeah. I think we're going to do some similar stuff for PAX Prime. There's been a... Mike is playing a lot of D&D and talking about it. So there's a lot more people at Penny Arcade who are basically, you know, they know more about D&D. They're really excited to see it. We definitely have some cool things going on at PAX that I can't talk about yet.
Sure.
But yeah, I'm pretty sure we're going to do the live experience again, and we're definitely going to do the D&D encounters, catch-ups, and stuff like that. So I would expect more. If you didn't get to go to PAX East, we're definitely going to do some similar stuff at PAX Prime.
Yeah. But that's basically, you know, PAX is traditionally seen as a video game convention, but that's where we do have a very big D&D presence. If you're a D&D fan, it's definitely a convention, East Coast, West Coast, you should think about going to.
Definitely.
I have you on my Twitter account. I'm following you. I noticed that during the PAX East weekend, Greg Bilson was the R&D person.
Mm-hmm.
Was there something about you guys giving away toys or something like that?
It's basically I had a whole bunch of like PH3s and some of the more recent 3D tile sets, stuff like that I brought with me to give to just people who came up to talk. And so I used the Twitter channel we have, which is it's just @wizards_D&D. And I use that to be like, hey, if you can find me, I'll give you some stuff. Or, hey, if you can find Greg, he has some... I started using the word treasure just to give away. But, yeah, it was mostly... It was just the most recent product. And it was to be like, hey, go find Greg. Give him a little bit of crap. Have a good time with him.
Yeah.
And get a book. So it worked out pretty well as far as... It was kind of like a scavenger hunt, too. Because yeah. Greg started tweeting, oh, look, I'm at this cool thing. And he would take a picture of the thing at PAX he was at. And then people would come find him, so...
Do you think we'll do something similar to at Gen Con this year? Maybe people should start
definitely
following on Twitter. Okay.
Yes, cool. Definitely. We will continue to do those scavenger hunts. Again, they're not really contests. It's just find us, talk to us, and give us some stuff.
What is your username on Twitter so folks can follow you?
The one that I use when I'm talking about most of the D&D stuff is @wizards_D, the letter N, the letter D. I also have @Trevor_Watsy, WOTC. If you're following for D&D, make sure you follow that Wizards D&D one. If you want to hear like why my cat has a cone on his head, plus maybe the Io Mondra campaign we're in on Wednesday, then that's the more the Trevor stuff.
So is your cat a wizard? Is that why he has a cone on his
head? No, he had some teeth pulled, so they didn't want him to
claw that his kind mouth. Of. I was imagining perched on his head like a hat.
No, it was no, that would be awesome. Shame. Cone of shame, cone. Cone of shame.
So to go on a tangent, my cat is actually being put on Prozac.
No, oh.
One of our three cats. And we gave him, so before we put him on Prozac, we had to put him on this other prescription, which we inadvertently gave him too much of.
Oh.
And so he lost control of his rear legs. So have you ever seen a truck, like a driving, and it's sort of maybe it's like starts to break and it fishtails, where like the whatever it's hauling starts to swing around?
Mm-hmm.
That was kind of our cat walking around for about 4 hours on Saturday, where his butt was almost parallel with his head. As he was kind of moving around and his butt's kind of drifting every which way because he couldn't exactly control it. So
you need pictures or didn't
I'm gonna report you to the Humane Society.
We gave him the pills and they said, realized, oh my god, this like I did some research online and realized they accidentally like gave the way too high a dose. So for people out there who don't know, I have a cat who's very fat, he's enormous, and he eats people food. He has eaten a sandwich.
A whole sandwich?
Almost like maybe a quarter of it.
Wow.
I gave it to him, I admit it. It's probably makes him a terrible pet owner. But he was begging for the sandwich. He looked really cute. He was this really cute thing with his paw where he waved at the sandwich, and I wasn't really hungry anymore, so I just gave it to him and he ate it. He also eats dog food and gets sick from it. He's an omnivore. He's going to eat anything. So.
It's the real life Garfield, is what we're talking about?
He's kind of like an audiog in cat.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So tell us a little bit about what's going on with the website and how you interact with it.
So a lot of the work that I'm doing lately is on the D&D group page. So it's kind of thing like Facebook. You can have groups and things like that. So you can go and you can join the group. And it kind of supplements what's going on our website and in our paper products, right? So if we've got a DDI article going out, we're going to talk about that on the group page. Specifically, we actually spoil content on Mondays now of every week that's going to be coming in the next week or so. So this week actually it's an article that you wrote, sir. It was I forget exactly what it is, but it's basically Warlock Paladins Tieflings. What was the name of that article?
He was the charisma-based powers for the Infernal Pact Warlock. So to give Tiefling Warlocks who want to be Infernal a way to follow that pact and not feel like they're a point behind because they're using con-based powers.
Yeah, exactly. So and so that came out today. That article came out today. But we spoiled a little bit of it. We spoiled one specific power on Monday. Talked a little bit about the flavor of it, and then said, "Hey, there's this thing coming out on Wednesday." And that's actually something that people can see even if they're not GDI subscribers. So it gives people who aren't subscribers a look at what maybe they're missing, and it gives the people who are subscribers an early look at what they're getting. And then Wednesdays we have someone from inside the company blog about something as well. It's generally something that goes along with what we're seeing that month or that week. So if we've got the Plane Above this month, so this week or next week you'll probably see someone talking about something about Gith and the Gith Zerai and the Gith Yankee conflicts and stuff like that. So and then Friday we have guest bloggers from outside the company, like maybe someone from Critical Hits or .com or someone from Dungeons. master.com. You don't want to mix those up, by the way. But we'll have someone from one of those sites blog on Friday, and it'll also be in the related theme. And we do stuff like with when you did the April Fool's things, we expanded the conversation so the community can finish answering the question for us. It's like, okay, so we've got all these dragons from the periodic table of dragons. But that's that kind of thing. So supplement what you're already seeing, and also just give us a conversation, a dialogue between sometimes silly things, sometimes more important things, like what type of adventure hooks would you use in this situation? How would you get players engaged? What kind of role-playing would you do? That kind of stuff, so.
Rajat. Who is Rajat?
He was one of the Sorcerer Kings from the original Dark Sun campaign set. See, again, we tried to pick guys.
I'm going to vote for Bargle.
Yeah, I'm going to vote for Bargle, too, because I've heard of him. Yeah. I mean, he has a... Frankly, I know there's a lot of nostalgia about the guy, but he's got a fairly unfortunate name. I can see why he turned to a life of evil. If I named my kid Bargle, I'd probably smack my kid around a lot.
Not as bad as Caraptus. From
yes. But I always assume that Caraptus is like a nom de guerre or something that the guy had picked up.
Lum the Mad versus Eklavda the Drow.
Oh, that's not obscure, dude.
What?
That is completely... Of course Eklavda would win.
Man's obscure is another man's... Because to me, Lum the Mad's cool. He invented the machine.
Cool. But he's dead. I mean, his machine clearly outlived him by quite a bit. Eklavda is still around. Yeah.
I vote for the Drow.
Yeah.
Eklavda.
I vote for Eklavda.
The Lord of Blaze versus Demigorgon.
Demigorgon. Oh, it's like no questions asked.
Right. Surprised?
A tubby robot versus an archdemon? Yeah, I think Demogorgon rips him in half as well.
How about Ice and Death, the White Dragon versus Nazra?
Oh, I think I gotta go with the dragon. I mean, Nazra has got, you know, well, first...
He was the Hill Giant shoot.
Well, it was, and that's also an anagram for Arneson. But I think he's only a hill giant at the end of the day, and he's only the first of the giant kings, so I've got to go with Isengard.
Who is Splug?
Oh.
I think Meepo would win.
I think Splug would win, because I created Splug.
If you created him, Mike, then even more I think Meepo is going to win.
So Splug was created, he was from my Eberron campaign, my third edition Eberron campaign I ran. The party met a goblin, and he ended up becoming like their pack animal. And the character, the way I played him, this is embarrassing to admit this, but he was based on someone that I knew that I didn't particularly like, and I had to come up with an NPC on the spot. So it was his original name was an anagram for some person's name, and he was this just really annoying, shifty con artist guy. And he was in turn based on my first edition Greyhawk campaign. There was a con artist character in the city of Greyhawk that the characters had to deal with. He was a thief. He was their local contact with the Thieves Guild. And he was this very slimy, oily, used car salesman kind of guy. So, NPC created off the cuff in 1989, ended up in almost 20 years later in an official print D&D product. Of course, his race had changed, his name had changed. But the soul of that NPC was right there.
Very good.
Let's say it's loosely based on a college basketball championship, which yeah. I don't know we're allowed to say.
Probably not. It's like the NFL's championship game.
Right.
It's copyrighted.
But there's, you know, always the potential for kind of an upset. Like, Duke almost got a
upset by Butler.
Can we even use Duke and Butler, or are those copyrighted too? I don't know.
Well, not the teams. I was referring to the Duke.
The Duke who fought a Butler.
And his won. Butler was an uprising.
By 2 points, somehow. I hope no one TiVo'd that game and is still waiting a week later to watch right. it.
Strahd.
Yes.
Yeah, who's Strahd?
I don't even care who the competitors are. Yeah. Strahd will win.
You would
win.
Vote for Strahd no matter what? It turns out he's fighting against your mom. I'm sorry. You just voted against your mom, you communist. Or is Lady of who where's Lady of Pain?
Yeah, where is the Lady of Pain?
She's on here.
Because Planescape fans are fanatical.
Well, and guess what? I also love Planescape, and
I will have
to say that the Lady of Pain, she should win every category. The reason why I so confidently say she will beat everybody is it should be a clue to our listeners that we have statted up Orcus, and we'll stat up all these other gods. The Lady of Pain is beyond them. She is also the only one, I bet, any of these characters who warranted a DM screen devoted entirely to her face.
That's true.
I think she is the only NPC in the history of Dungeons & Dragons who had an entire DM screen devoted to her face.
And that, folks, was a minor discourse we recorded in the middle of the podcast. I was asking Mike Merles and Jeremy Crawford who their picks would be for the creature competition taking place now on the D&D website.
So yeah. Next up, we're going to talk about Hammerfest, this Dungeons & Dragons role-playing game supplement written by some mysterious fellow named Mike Merles.
It's a very dashing fellow, from what I understand, what I've been told by others.
So what does this dashing fellow have to say about Hammerfest?
Oh, about Hammerfest. Oh, sorry.
not about yourself.
Well, if I may speak about myself. I prepared a few note cards with remarks. No, this was basically something we added to the schedule last year. There's another one called Vorrukoth, which is a ruined city of Tiefling from the Tiefling Empire, Baal Tirath. And it's essentially, it takes the 32-page adventure format, which we've done in the past, but not yet in 4th edition. I think this is the first, well, no, we had done it for the Dragonborn book. But it basically just takes a location in the Nintervale, and it's 32 pages about that location. It's a dwarven settlement. It is a necropolis that the dwarves, after the Nintervale was overrun by an invading army of orcs, the dwarven outposts in the Dawnforge Mountains were destroyed. The surviving dwarves gathered in the necropolis as like the one last standing place, and they have settled there. It is now one of the largest cities. I think it might be the largest city in the Nintervale. And so basically the booklet is just casts Hammerfest as a starting location or a central civilized location for your campaign. There are over 50 locations in the town itself described. There's a poster map of Hammerfest itself, which you can use in play. And the idea is you can just lay the map down and say, okay, well, here's Hammerfest. Where do you guys want to go? Or here you are in town. You know, you're going to visit this NPC, and here's where he lives. For each of the 50, I think it might be an even 50, locations that are described inside the city, I try to include not only a description of the place and why you'd go there, but an adventure hook, an NPC who's attached to the place, what makes them interesting. There's also a hex map that describes the area around Hammerfest.
Nice and old school.
Yeah, exactly.
The hex map.
Exactly. I like hex maps for outdoor maps. I know there is an artistic element to the map that doesn't have any sort of grid on it, where you just sort of have to, like, 1 inch is 1 mile, whatever. But I hate having to track distances in those maps. So I went with a hex map, so it's easier to track where you're going. And I just tried to insert, a similar approach to the interior of the city, where I just take a number of different interesting locations in the wilderness around town and give those write-ups and describe what's going on. It's really meant to be something that jumpstarts your imagination. There's not really any full-blown encounters or adventures in this. It's more, okay, I need a place to base my campaign. Here's a place that has a lot of adventure suggestions. And it's detailed enough the players can just kind of wander around town and you can give them a sense of where they are and what they see.
Now, these adventure suggestions, are they inside Hammerfest? Are they in the environs near the city or both?
It's both. Mm-hmm. There is also a detailed description of the most popular tavern in town, the most popular tavern for adventurers. And there's also, in the end of the book, I think there's like 6 pages or so, that just outlines a campaign that could take you from levels 1 to 10. And it draws on the locations and the NPCs in the town to create, like, if you're just looking for an entire campaign. What I also tried to do, too, was, in addition to this campaign storyline, was make it so it's pretty easy to insert other adventures into it. It's something that, for one session or one series of sessions, maybe you're dealing with that campaign as the primary thing. Then maybe it drops into the background, and for a while, you're going on other adventures, and the things relating to the campaign are more background elements, more just like one role-playing scene in a four-hour session instead of the entire session. And then it sort of culminates in the main villainous threats in Hammerfast are all kind of tied together into this one storyline that you can explore. So yeah, it's really just there to be kind of a framing device for your campaign.
Now, let's say I'm a DM who has his own setting, and I don't use the Nentir Veil. Is there anything in Hammerfast that would be useful to me?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I try to design it so that the city itself is fairly independent from the area around it. I mean, there are references, but it isn't a situation where taking it out of its context renders it useless. So it's really, I think you could drop it in whole cloth into your own campaign. I know actually for a campaign I'm running right now, I'm using Hammerfast, but I'm not using the Nentir Veil. So all I did was, on the hex map that comes with Hammerfast, I just drew the map that would covers the area to the west, and it just has different terrain. You know, where there is a road, there's a trade road that sort of trails off to the west, and now it just goes into the sort of Barrow Downs kind of Tolkien-esque region I built for a campaign I'm starting up.
Now, so, when I asked that question, it was actually a rhetorical question, because I've been looking at Hammerfast, and, you know, I am a DM who doesn't use the Nentir Veil. I have my own setting, and I have been thinking about using Hammerfast.
Cool. That's good to hear. Thank you. Yeah. And I hope people, when they look at it, even if they don't use it, maybe reading through it gives them a lot of ideas. Mm-hmm. I mean, there's a certain element to it, especially the old TSR, like, books that I really liked. You know, it's like some of the Forgotten Realms supplements, like Moonshae and stuff, where just reading it was enjoyable, and it gave me ideas for my campaign. I might never use Moonshae. I mean, I can only run so many campaigns. But it just, you know, there are ideas there, how the druids relate to the land, and the rivalry between the folk and the sort of the Viking-esque northerners and stuff like that. And, you know, and how the health of the land is reflected in different druidic sites. And I may just import that into my campaign. I might not actually use Moonshae itself, but I'm inspired by it.
And it's funny you bring up that exact supplement, because that supplement, a number of years ago, had a big influence on my campaign setting, because my campaign is primarily centered on this island called the Isle of Oberon, heavily Celtic themed, and I drew a bunch of material from that Moonshae supplement, even though I wasn't using the Moonshaes or the Forgotten Realms.
Yeah, and I think that's something which you're trying to get kind of capture, you know, with this product, is just getting, you know, this book, just getting people thinking in terms of story. You know, we're doing things that aren't just powers and feats. And yeah, so it was a blast to work on, and I'm really happy with the way it came out. So yeah, I think it's something where if you're either just looking for something to add, you know, an easily added modular piece you can put in an existing campaign, or you just want to kick off a pretty straightforward campaign, I hope if you buy this and you read it, you find that it's going to serve as a good sort of the framing device, a good starting point for your campaign. Well, thanks a lot for listening to the D&D podcast. On behalf of Jeremy, I want to thank Trevor Kidd for taking the time to come on the podcast and talk about the online community. And as usual, thanks to Bart Carroll, our fearless producer, for putting this all together and herding the cats that are the staff and us, basically.
Yeah, we are the two cats.
Yeah, basically. Well, with our schedules and everything and getting everything put together. As usual, if you have any questions, comments, or concerns about the podcast, shoot an email to dndinsider@wizards.com. And until next episode, thanks for listening.